Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Podcast Report. Cliff Ravenscraft here from PodcastAnswerMan.com and your host for this podcast devoted to the podcasting track of New Media Expo. That's right, my friends. And also on the line with us each and every week, my wonderful co-host and great guest getter, none other than Megan Enloe. Megan, how's it going this week?
It is going great. How are you, Cliff?
I have never been better. It gets better every single day. And I cannot believe it. There is only 4.5 weeks before the January event.
Unbelievable. I know. It's coming up so fast.
And I'll tell you, we are so delighted because we have a very special guest that is going to be speaking at New Media Expo and giving a whole super session. Now, super session is special because there are only 3 events happening during that time slot instead of the normal, whatever, 10 or 12 tracks that are going side by side. But they have these super sessions where there are only 3 options to choose from. And we're super delighted to have a special guest that's coming from the podcasting community. He is a pioneer in podcasting, and you're going to tell us all about this guest now.
I am. Our guest today was raised in Sheboygan, Michigan. He got his love of monster films from his father at a very early age, and his mother gave him a love for the world of books and opened him up to reading. He devoured books in Sheboygan. How he came from devouring books in Sheboygan to living in San Francisco and being a New York Times best-selling author is a tale I'm sure he will tell. I first met Scott when he was walking the floors of the very first Podcast Expo with a backpack full of books. What books, you ask? None other than the very first podcast-only novel, Earthcore. Podcasting his books right to the end, prior to putting them out as in book form, turned out to be genius. Listeners like me waited not so patiently all the time for the next episode, as he cliffhangered us each week. We begged for more audio like an addict begs his dealer. His followers took on the name Junkies, and his persona of future Dark Overlord was born. Today I bring you the author of Nocturnal, Ancestor, Infected, and Contagious, hardcover thrillers from Crown Publishing, and the co-founder of Dark Overlord Media, which publishes the Galactic Football Series, The Rookie, The Starter, The All-Pro, and The MPV. The FDO himself, Scott Sigler.
Hey, Scott.
Hello. How you doing?
We have never been better, man. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I just finished a story for an anthology right before you guys called for the interview. So I'm in pretty good shape today.
Well, I'll tell you, we are delighted to have you here. And one of the things that impresses me is that you have built a massive online following through podcasting. Did you have a following before podcasting?
No, I had no following. I was just an aspiring author like so many other aspiring authors, trying to work my way through the obstacles of agents and publishers and submitting ideas and stories and novels. So I was as far on the outside as outside gets, and I had before I found podcasting, I had spent 9 years trying to get published through traditional channels and wasn't successful.
How did you first hear about podcasting?
I worked for a company called SNP Communications in San Francisco, and they're still around. And they did this very cool thing where they would do a Larry King lifestyle show for Fortune 500 CEOs or big-timers at the larger tech companies. And it would give, for example, Scott McNeely would get to come in and sit down, and they would have already pre-interviewed all the guests, had all the stories, and just given Scott bullet point questions to ask. And the guys they were talking to had bullet point answers, but the bullet points rapidly, it just let everybody have a nice natural conversation. And S&P would record these things, edit them down, and then companies would distribute these throughout the organization as a way to increase communication, and some FaceTime to the people in charge. And Sun has like, 20,000 employees, so basically it's a small city. So that's what they did. And I came in to be the marketing director there, and started to research different ways to get the message out, and came across podcasting. This is in late 2004, I think, or early 2005, and saw the parallels between podcasting and iPods and the transistor radio and FM, and how the transistor radio went on to completely change the face of entertainment communication, because it brought this unknown thing called FM to the forefront. And there was, they were very similar in their ways they were growing. Did a presentation to the company, and they were kind of like, oh, that's nice, but that's just a delivery mechanism. That's not an actual thing. And I was like, okay, well, I had done all that research, and then it seemed obvious to me that podcasting serialized episodes was a perfect way to deliver an audiobook. It would be like the radio drama of the 40s and the 50s. So I went looking for books to listen to via podcasting, and when I couldn't find any, I had that light bulb moment of, wow, I could be the first one to do this thing right here, and then quickly learn how to record and how to edit and how to make an RSS feed, and got my episodes of Earthcore out in March of 2005, and it's been rolling ever since.
Wow, March 2005, that is the early days, my friend.
Yeah, it is.
When you started this thing, how many people like latched on, and how long did it take before you started to say, "Wow, this is more than what I thought it would possibly be"?
I would say it took about 10 episodes. I quickly found out that two other people had basically the same light bulb moment, and that was T. Morris podcasting a book called Moravi, and Mark Jeffrey podcasting called The Pocket and the Pendant, and we all started to riff off of each other, and then all three of our books went up at a site called The Dragon Page, which is another very, very early genre sci-fi podcast. And so all of those things kind of combined, and all of our audience, we started sharing all of our audiences, and everybody was so, the audiences were so excited. They're like, wait, this is author-read fiction, and it's free, and there's no trick, and they're going to give us the whole story. And when the community first started out, there was an initial groundswell that hit about episode number 10 or 11 of Earthcore. So probably by May, you know, I had 10,000 people listening every week, and it was a pretty big trip. And then it's gone higher than that and lower than that in the 7 years since. But really, that probably episode number 11, right about May of 2005, it was like, okay, this was a good idea, and this worked.
I have a question for you, Scott. So you had this success early on. You were one of the pioneers. There were a lot of people back in that day, back in 2005, who said, wow, podcasting, this is the next biggest thing. There was radio, then there was television, but this takes radio, the audio portion, to a whole new realm, and they actually thought that basically in a couple years, radio would be completely irrelevant, and podcasting was going to be all that anybody did. Were you one of those people?
No, I've always thought there's going to be a place for radio. It could be a long-term generational thing, but there's a lot of great content on the radio. I mean, but radio, I think the music radio has suffered immensely from podcasting and MP3s, because now you don't have to listen to inane DJs and commercials to get to listen to exactly what you want to listen to. But Napster was the first one to really put the dagger into that. But you know, talk radio is still the dominant force in radio, and that's still successful. You know, your Rush Limbaugh's, your Howard Stern's, et cetera, all those things are great, because then they take content, they're already serving that up to their live audience, and then they just turn it into a podcast anyway. So I think the impact of radio has been diminished by podcasting, but not all that much. What's really happened is you've got a ton of new listeners listening to all this podcast content that probably wouldn't otherwise be listening to radio. So it's not really an either or, it's an and. So I think radio is still going to be around for a long time.
I'm so glad you answered that way, because that's exactly what I think. In fact, you know, at that time, everyone was saying that radio was going to be dead. And then a few years later, people started saying podcasting is dead. And I kept saying, no, neither one are dead. Neither one is going to die. They're going to have their ups and downs, and they're going to change. So there was, you know, some excitement about podcasting, and then it did tend to die down. And recently, like you said, there's a lot of radio shows, and a lot of comedians have really jumped into it to raise their own, you know, awareness. What do you think of the current state of podcasting, as it seems to be back on a rise?
I think it's better than ever. I think the resurgence of stand-up comedy is the, you know, when we started out, there was this sudden explosion where you had people who had never published a single written page, who had 20, 30, 40,000 people listening to their stories every week. And it made, you know, it made careers. Why? Because there was nowhere for anyone to get this content other than this podcast. We were in bookstores. There was nowhere to find us. So all of a sudden, people got to discover these new talents and be part of that community and enjoy them. And that had, in a sense, and now I would say there's that's coming down a bit. And then there were other ways, like the mom-and-pop talk shows, like the Dawn and Drews, the Keith and the Girls. Those had their big early ascent. And now I think the dominant force right now is comedy, because you've got all these people who are professionals at thinking on their feet and being clever and saying funny things. And now they can hit the record button and have a global English-speaking audience and their content delivered at the speed of light. And it's just free distribution for them. So it's like, of course, Chris Hardwick and Mark Maron and a lot of other people have really boosted their careers by just getting on the mic and talking and doing what they do really well, which is being funny. But it all comes back to, you've got people who are really good at what they do, but they can't get to the marketplace and get to the audience because of all the gatekeepers that are in the way trying to control what goes out and when it goes out. And then you just get rid of all those gatekeepers. I'm just going to record this funny stuff. I'm going to put it out every week. And then people start to find it, and people start to share it with their like-minded friends, and audiences grow from there.
I'm so glad you mentioned Chris Hardwick and Mark Maron. We are trying very hard to get those folks out to the show. We really want their presence because of everything that you just said. They have taken this lead and are showing us what podcasting can do, and that is absolutely awesome. I wanted to get back to your book.
I would say they're just extremely good at what they do. You listen to the Nerdist show, and the three guys on the Nerdist show, they're really, really talented. And it's just that just podcasting just gives them this free distribution for people to be able to discover them. So the cream is rising to the top in a lot of different areas.
I wouldn't disagree with a word of that. Absolutely. Chris Hardwick and Mark Maron are the tops. That's why we want to have them at the show. I wanted to ask you about your books that you write. Now, you've written some pretty scary novels. Tell us about the Crown Publishing, and then I want to ask you about your young adult in a little bit. Tell us about your Crown Publishing books.
Well, the Crown Publishing books, that's the stuff I started out to write way back when I was in the sixth grade and read my first Stephen King novel, and had seen, you know, the monster movies of the late 70s, early 80s. And so that all of that's really a dream come true. But all of these are books that I podcast initially. I podcast, Earth Core was my first one, and that's not out, that's out of print. And then Ancestor, I podcast, and that has become a hardcover novel for Crown. And then the third book I put out was called Infected as a podcast. And that one wound up being Crown's first big hardcover, the one they put out and tried to make some noise about. So it's obviously there's a serious crossover between the content I'm putting out in audio and the content that comes out in hardcover. But for the most part, these are hard science horror novels. So we're trying to get that visceral, frightening feeling of reading a Stephen King novel, but the source of the scary comes from actual science, actual physics, trying to keep it as real as possible to make the scary story. So it get rid of the supernatural altogether. So
that's one of the things.
Kind of
sorry.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
That's one of the things that I love about you, because I have a science background, and so knowing that you have, you know, you have consulted with the scientists that would know this stuff to make it as real as possible really changes it. It takes it from, oh, this is something magical that could never happen, to, you know what, with a few little twists, this actually, something like this could happen, which makes it even scarier. Now, you've written go ahead.
I just say that the people who gravitate towards the scientific fact, when they read my stuff, getting a lot of the details correct really gives them, they give themselves permission to go further down the rabbit hole. You give them four or five things that they know, and then you introduce four or five new things that are actual cutting-edge science, and people just shut off all the barriers that say, well, this isn't real, this isn't happening, and they just get so immersed by the story. So the people do the supernatural thing as well, and that's scary in a whole different way, in that you have zero predictability. You have no idea what's coming, and there are these forces you can't truly understand. And scientific horror is just another aspect of it. These are forces you can understand, and if you can see how we put this and this and this together, well, then the whole world's going to melt, and you're going to die.
And the FDO is going to take over. Now, after writing all of these books that are not really safe for use, I would not give this, certainly not give this to a kid. I'm sure there are some teenagers that are reading You're Infected and Contagious, but it's not really written for them. It is written for adults. But your other series you wrote as a young adult series. Tell us about The Rookie.
The Rookie is the first book in the Galactic Football League series, and this is a kind of a classic science fiction coming-of-age seven-book series with a chosen one protagonist coming from a poor background, and we just set that story against the backdrop of a professional American Football League 700 years in the future. So you have humans playing football alongside four other races, all of whom are drastically different in their physiology. We don't have, this is a person with blue skin, bumps on their face. That's not an alien in any of my worlds. We've got things that look like monsters, and you're on the field with them. And we follow the story of Quentin Barnes, who's this 19-year-old quarterback prodigy, just an insane talent. But he comes from an all-human system that's extremely violent and racist against any alien race. And he's the dominant athlete in his all-human league, but he wants to be the best that's ever been. And to do that, he has to leave his home and go join the Intergalactic League, where he's playing against the greatest athletes that have ever lived. So the whole series is a big metaphor for the unifying power of sports, the integration that happens on a football field or a basketball court or a softball diamond, and you get to watch Quentin's transition from backwater racist hick into a leader of sentient beings, and that right now it's gone across four books, from The Rookie all the way through the MVP, and every book is another season in his career, and of course, like most stories, a lot of other crazy things happen to him while he's in there. My dad's a high school football coach. My brother's a high school football coach. I've been surrounded by the sport since before I could walk. And this is really a love letter to sport and just showing that, yeah, these athletes are not stupid people. And it's been a lot of fun showing my fellow sci-fi nerds that, you know, let me walk you through the math that's involved in a quarterback's passing tree that he has to go through 1,000 possible combinations in 3 seconds while someone's trying to take off his head. It's been really fun to show a lot of people, yeah, these are not dumb jocks. This is very complicated stuff that they have to do, and kind of sharing things that way. But it's great. The books, The Rookie and The Starter, are in paperback in bookstores. And so we're quite impressed. We got our own distribution deal for them. So now these have gone from free podcasts all the way to a mass production run, and they're carried in Barnes & Noble and in other stores. And we're trying to push people towards those because they make fantastic Christmas presents for any teenager who's into science fiction. Or the last thing I'll say about it is the other thing that we've found out with this that was a real wonderful thing to learn is that these have a great appeal to kids who aren't into reading all that much. Sometimes you've got that nephew who's a jock or that niece who's a volleyball player, and she's not interested in sparkly vampires or wizard kids, and they think they don't like to read. They think, they're like, oh, reading's not for me. But we get email after email about parents and family who bought these books for their kids, their nephews and nieces, for their friends, and the kids just immediately devour the series, and all of a sudden, oh, look, they actually like to read. So from that perspective, it's not something I thought of when I started writing the series, but to see that happen on a regular basis is really cool.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I got to tell you, Scott, I should not be a fan of yours. I really shouldn't, because I don't like horror. I don't read anything else from any other horror novel, and I can't stand football. It bores the heck out of me. But you won me over because you were podcasting so early, and I liked your style, and I liked everything that you were doing, and I liked what you were giving to the podcast community. And so I became a fan for those reasons, not because I liked your genre. And with The Rookie, I wasn't crazy about it at first until I realized what you were doing and that you were actually making an effort to get those jocks, those ones you said are not dumb jocks, prove that they're not dumb jocks by getting a book into their hand. So I'm glad that you talked about that, because that is how you won me over to the Galactic Football League series.
And it really comes down to interest level, at least for that series. You know, having been a football player and a wrestler, and although I was a crazy sci-fi nerd and still am, having a foot firmly in both worlds, you know, I watched these kids get marginalized in class and get treated as something less simply because their interests did not involve the literary. And there was no book anyone ever put in their hands that catered to the things they were interested in. So they never really got a chance to discover the wonder of reading because they just weren't interested in the books that people gave them. So to have a series like this that appeals both to athletes and to sci-fi nerds, because there's starship battles and there's traveling from planet to planet and crazy alien races and strange interactions. There's all the things that appeal to the genre fan. Then there's also that backdrop of this pro football league, and it just allows people to identify more with the characters and get lost in the story and find out that reading's a good time.
So, Scott, this is amazing. You're sitting here, you're actually in a place 7 years later where you're literally having an impact on people's lives. You're helping kids fall in love with reading. You've got fans of the more mature audience that are just enjoying and being entertained by your content. You have raving fans around the world who call you their leader, the Dark Overlord. Did you ever think this would be possible 7 years ago let me ask you this. Are you doing this full time today, or do you still have a day job?
Yeah, I do this full time.
So this, when did it become your full time gig, and what was it like leaving the traditional world of employment behind?
Well, when this started out, like when I discovered learned about podcasting and saw that nobody was doing these audiobooks via the podcast, I was immediately convinced that, look, if I just get to 10,000 listeners a week, I'm going to go show these stats to the publishers in New York, and they're going to hit me in the face with piles of money. And I got to 10,000 listeners, and I started trying to, you know, I had an agent, and I'm trying, like, giving the agent the download stats. I'm like, go show these to people. Look at this. This is amazing. This is market-tested fiction. There's nothing like it. You can't have market-tested fiction. What wonderful. And they're like, what's a podcast? And the good ones and the bad ones were like, what is this internet? I'm not really sure. They were so far behind the times. So my initial strategy was that. Then I was a little crushed to find out that didn't work, and then just kept at it. And the break came because we put out Earthcore in print, and I kind of watched the process and learned what was going on, and then put out the book Ancestor as a trade paperback from Dragon Moon Press, a little tiny Canadian imprint. And when that came out, I was starting to understand the concept of Amazon better, so I just asked all my fans to go buy it on April 1st, 2007, like this. This April Fool's Day, go buy this book. And that happened, and it shot to number one in horror, number one in sci-fi on Amazon, and the number two fiction book overall behind a Harry Potter novel. So that kind of, and this is all for ebooks. That's really the important thing to remember about my arc is, so this wasn't a 99-cent ebook. This wasn't a free ebook. This was an actual, you know, $17 plus shipping trade paperback. So it was an apples-to-apples comparison with the big timers. And for 3 days, this tiny little book and my podcast audience tipped the crap out of all the big timers. It was the number one book in horror and sci-fi. So that happened, and then that's when New York paid attention. That was the language that New York could understand when they're looking at these charts and saying, I've never heard of this guy. How is this guy ahead of Dean Koontz and Stephen King? And then the agent was able to get infected on a lot of new desks, and a lot of people read it. Suddenly it wound up in auction, it wound up in a bidding war, and I got an advance for Infected and for two other books. And that was good enough that my wife and I had to make a decision. Do I keep the day job and just, you know, do this writing thing and let other people handle all the marketing and all the distribution, or do I quit the job, live off this advance for a couple of years, and just put 100% effort into trying to make this as big as it can be? So we chose the latter, and I've spent the last 5 years working with Crown, putting out those books, but also as the ebook thing has developed, and learning how to put out our own books and learning how to sell, you know, make our own 3,000 copy hardcover run and sell through that, which is a pretty big number for books that are $35 a pop, and do all that to our audience. My business partner, A. Kovacs, and I have spent the last 3 years, when we're done with Crown, we would like to have our own little imprint going, have our own books out there, and so far it's building towards that. What some people are doing with ebooks is staggering. You know, like Hugh Howey, who's a science fiction horror writer, and is probably going to make $1 million this year selling ebooks. So we're not at that level, but we are selling hardcovers from our site. We've got paperback. We've actually got our own paperback distributed to Barnes & Noble, so we're in brick and mortar stores. We've got all our Galactic Purple League ebooks and ebook novellas and short story collections. So by the end of this year, we'll have probably 12 things in the Amazon marketplace. But I'm not just going full-time hoping that I'm somehow become the next big thing thanks to Crown marketing. We're moving forward assuming that Crown's not really going to do anything, because most books get no publicity whatsoever. That's just the way the industry works. So we're moving forward like, yeah, when the money runs out from this thing, we want to have our own business already rolling and showing recurring revenue.
Well, it's awesome to know that all of this got started because of podcasting. And, of course, you're going to be coming and speaking at the podcasting track. We have to wrap here within the next 5 minutes. What can you tell us about the session that you're going to be giving so people can get excited and come out and see you?
We're going to do a super session on how to prepare a fictional content for podcast or for vidcast. You know, there's a lot of people who are better than we are at advertising and the actual recording details and what equipment you should use. But what we bring to the table with our presentation is, okay, so you've got a story. You've got an audio drama. You've got a script. How do you put that together in an episodic, engaging way? How do you cast voice actors? How much do you edit, et cetera? And trying to show people, like, if you've got that old manuscript in your desk somewhere, and you're already doing a lot of this new media stuff, you should listen to this and see what you can do to put out your own entertainment property and see what you can do with it. So really just looking at the tactical of how do you get that done, how do you tell that story, how much time are you looking at, et cetera, and the artistic, you're not a professional voice actor. So do you hire a professional voice actor? Do you read it on your own? If you do, how? What kind of character nuances are you going for? And trying to do overall a boot camp or a down and dirty way that entertainment thing that you have, that story or that play, et cetera, is not doing you anything sitting there. Here's a way to get it done quickly, get it done at a high quality, and get it out and start entertaining people.
That is awesome, Scott. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your story with us, and I look forward to seeing you in 4.5 weeks in Vegas. What's one of the things that you're most looking forward to coming to NMX?
I'm most forward to some of the stuff that I talked about that I don't cover. I want to get some of the technical aspects, make sure that I'm doing things correctly. I want to start networking with a lot of other podcasts to find places to share promos and get message out as big as possible. My last book for Crown comes out in the fall of 2013. It's called Pandemic. It is the end book in a trilogy that goes Infected, Contagious, and then finally Pandemic. So I'm really going to New Media Expo to network and try and meet other people and try and make connections and friends so that when it's time to promote my big final book of Crown, that I'll have a larger audience to get that out to.
That is awesome. And real quick, before we say goodbye, tell us where people can find out about this Galactic Football League that you've got going on.
Well, they can find out about it at scottsigler.com, which is scottsigler.com, or galacticfootballleague.com, all one word. And people can follow me on Twitter. That's Scott Sigler. Or join our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/ScottSiglerPage.
Thanks, Scott, so much for taking the time and working with through all the technical difficulties to get you on. We really appreciate you coming and telling us about your session and your wonderful books.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to see you guys in 4 weeks.
All right. Well, that was a great time. I'm looking forward to getting to meet Scott face-to-face. So many years I've heard the name Scott Sigler over and over again. And finally get to meet the guy, and I'm excited that he's excited about the technical and coming and learning and networking with people. It's going to be a blast.
He is a super, super guy. You know, he does this thing where he calls himself the FDO, and it's kind of a character that he plays. But as you can see, you know, talking to him, he's really a marketing genius, and he really knows his stuff. So it's people like him that are coming to the show where they know how to play the role of whatever, you know, character they're playing. For their podcast, but they're also real people with real good ideas that they're going to share with us at New Media Expo.
Absolutely. And of course, New Media Expo, January 6th through the 8th in Las Vegas, Nevada at the Rio All Suite Hotel and Casino.
And the prices are going up. Prices are going up on December 15th. Prices will be going up, so get your tickets now.
That's right. And if you go to facebook.com/New Media Expo, they've got special coupons and offers there from time to time. Make sure you follow them because you'll get some discounts. Of course, podcast award finalist gets 50% off. Nominees get 30% off. If you need details on all of that stuff, just reach out to somebody like Megan even. She'll help you out. Where can
Absolutely.
They find you on Twitter?
They can find me on Twitter at NMX Podcast. And my email is just Megan, M-E-G-A-N, at NMXEvents.com.
That's right. Go sign up. Register today.